Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this, I'll tell you about heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the
loss of God.
I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like this today. Eventually. Of Zuma Time. I'm your host, the Culture Vulture, Dr. Mark, and I'm going to call to complain, whine, bitch, moan, whatever you got to do to vent after what was an exciting and interesting election night. We were on the air last night for about an hour and a half, pontificating, trying to make sense of the illogical, trying to deal with the change in the wind, the air, like I said. Leaves of brown, grass is this, nettle on the ground. You know, the ladies way there. Take you way back when life was simple. Wow, so it's all over. It's all over. Oh, wow, it just seems like yesterday when Oprah was crying, everybody was in Chicago, joined as one, change was coming. Oh, geez, I feel like Bill Cosby. The change is coming in the jello and the... Nothing. Nothing got done. I don't care what any of these pundits say. Nothing got done. And after yesterday, nothing again will get done for another 2 years. Stay tuned for more BS on this radio channel, because that's all you're going to get, belief systems. That's all you're getting is that it's a bunch of mimetic bumper cars out there spewing ideas and pinging them off your puny brains to your cry uncle. I want this thing erased. Why does this computer insist on driving me insane? Don't the humans get enough of a shot at me all day long? You creation! Ugh. So here I am on the air again. I like doing a show a couple days in a row. Wow, people actually get paid to do this, talk every day on the radio. Anybody out there in Curious, Sirius, any of those constellations wants to hire me? I have a lot to say. Lord knows that. Lord knows that! Let me just finish telling my Facebook friends that I'm actually doing a show. If you care. Bang! There you go. Facebook, I feel like I have to report to the Borg every 5 minutes anymore. No, I don't. Close the window. Please. Open the window. Close the window. I have a little mental menopause today. Just, you know, day after election, a couple of days after Halloween. We're now into November. November, as my mother says it. November. And it's depressing. You just see the whole year go by like a blur. Like a frickin' blur. Where was this? Where was this year? Where did we spend it? I could kind of highlight it in a couple of steps. Came out of the first part of the year, horrible winter, and got through the Super Bowl, and, you know, basically stumbled my way into the Chaos Conference down there in Tampa, right around when healthcare passed. I think it was around March somewhere. And it was brutal because I'm sitting in a room with a lot of smart cookies, a lot of pointy-headed academics, you know, with a lot of PhDs after the names, really important people. I mean, that know stuff and know people that know stuff, you know, and they're running to the television to watch this vote, this health care bill vote. And it's crazy. It's crazy that here we are not even 6-7 months later, and I don't know. It seems like that event of the healthcare bill getting passed took place 10 years ago. Because what's happened in the interim, the BP spill and the terrorist thing in New York City and everything that went on all summer, you know, between the obstructionists and the progressives and all the other people with all the other labels, and then, of course, the freaking Tea Party and all the other things that went on as we got past the summer and the BP spill was dealt with. But we had corruption over here and corruption over there. And the immigration thing started up. And, oh, my God, what are we going to do about that? And it all just kind of rolled downhill. And we have this very ornate, very sort of fait accompli election. And everybody thinks now that, oh, my God, Republicans have the House. Democrats, you know, got whittled away at the Senate. They fired Pelosi. All the Obama haters are running around thumping their chests today. Obama's, you know, trying to absorb the loss of being, you know, basically just, like, slapped across the face for not understanding. It was about the jobs, you dummy. Forget the health care. Forget the Nobel Peace Prize. Forget the wars. Forget the swine flu. Forget it all. We just wanted our jobs. Because if you look at the middle of the country, where he kicked ass in, 2 years ago, they kind of flipped the switch on them. The governors went the other way, and so did the senators. But it's a big so freaking what? You know why? Because a lot of the stuff that they're going to realize, and now they got a lame duck session. When you get in there in January, a lot of stuff's going to go basically the way of the wind. We'll be into the holidays soon. No one's going to care about this stuff in about a week and a half. They come back after the holidays in January, swear these guys in, especially these Tea Party jokers who are absolutely being played like fiddles and fools by the machine, by the Rovians. The Rovians, when they realize what they're up against. Obama had it to go through 2 years ago. You know, because, I don't know if you guys saw the scene out there in Arlington a couple days ago when they had Bush 41 and Bush 43, you know, come in and throw out the first ball, the Nolan Ryan. Sorry, tuberculosis kicking in. And you know, I'm watching this ceremony, and these Texans are cheering these guys on like heroes, you know, the president, whatever. And I'm watching this, and I'm saying to myself, how in the world is anybody able to tolerate the sight of George W. Bush? He represents to me sort of an iconic, that word iconic's been tossed around a lot in sports lately, but I'm going to use it here, an iconic representation of the FUBAR branch of government. He's everything, embodies everything that's wrong about the way America went the last 10 years. He is the symbol. And yet, for some reason, still has supporters. Still has people that think he did a good job. He still has people that think his policies could work. They're talking about keeping the Bush tax cuts. Are they insane? Yes. Yes. And now you elected them. Because you had to show Obama who was boss. And we're going to get him. We're going to get him back. We don't like this guy. Okay. Okay, pal. Well, you know, and up here in Larchmont, Westchester County, you know, actually, you know what? Before I even do anything, I need to check in on my pal Susie here. Susie Q. Susie Q. Let's see. Let's see what Susie Q's up to. She was, let's see. She was in a close race. Susie Oppenheimer, in case you didn't tune in the last night's show, was up for re-election. And it was close. I don't know if she won. It was really close. But I'll check her out. Again, the spelling bee. Susie Oppenheimer. She was losing last night. Let's see if she pulled it off. As soon as she got in there. Senator from New York State. New York State. You know, state senator. Not like Chuck Schumer. Too close to call. Wow. Well, that was last night. What the hell's going on today? I got no news on this thing? Wow. Let's go to Google. Google's tuned in. The Google. I'm feeling really goofy. For the next week, suspicion is rampant. The world is turning really fast. Let's see. Too close to freaking call. Are you kidding me? Oh, Oppenheimer takes slim lead. What the hell was that? This is nuts. A day later, we still don't know who won this race. So let's see. Republican on the verge. 81% of the vote in. GOP. Okay, GOP Senate hopeful says 37th district. Slumlord attack is bogus. I don't know. I can't find out if she won. Let's see. Let's see if they got anything. I mean, 81% of the vote, she was still winning a little bit. If anyone knows if Susie Oppenheimer won or lost, please tell me. I'm obsessed with getting this woman out of there. Let's see. Yeah, she leads by 180 votes. Well, there's going to be a recount in a couple of states, Minnesota being one. There's a lot of stuff going on. Let's see. Live blog of 23 hours ago. Cohen gets Times endorsement. What? There's no news. How could this not be decided yet? It's bizarre. Anyway, there's the Susie news. If anyone knows, let me know. I'll see if anyone on Facebook can tell me. Let's see. Look around. Leaves the ground. There's snow on the ground. Did. Just again, checking in with Professor Val O'Pagan Pal. See if she can join us. I'm very discouraged by the fact that Google doesn't know. All right, Professor Val's on it. She'll pop in with an answer soon. She will find out. I'm really discouraged. I thought that would be decided by this time. Guess not. There's a patch of snow. Let's see. I lost my there you go. All right, again, the number to call to get on this thing is 646-478-4847. Again, 646-478-4847. Reactions to the election, whatever you got, I will go absolutely to the edge of the earth on this tonight. Trying to get it out of our system. We might have Paul Garcia from the Merlin Project on at 9:30. I'm not sure. He might just pop in. Oh, here's the answer. Very close. Yeah. That's what I saw. Anyway, who cares if Susie wins? The world's not going to change it. Some real estate guy named Bob Cohen is the senator from this district. I mean, really, come on. What are we talking here? Ah, boy. So what I want to do to kind of go around the horn here is let's see what the pundits are saying. First, we'll check in with Rachel Maddow. See what this eco has to say tonight. She's on commercial here. We'll get her on here in a minute. Because I'm more interested in how the ideological tone of the conversation changes now. We'll pass the midterms, and we're going to be getting into, you know, a primary election, you know, basically, you know, a general election in 2 years as we start the long, slow trek to Obama's reelection. Oh, boy. Oprah's back out, the whole thing. Change you can wait around for. So, you know, what I did, took the liberty of looking at the Huffington Post, you know, sort of skinny on all these races, and broke them down according to their domains. Now, if you don't know what the four domains are, I will give you a 90-second crash course. When you're born, you must bond with the maternal unit in order to survive. This entrains an awareness called neuroception. Neuroception is the nervous system being aware of itself. Once that happens, you feel safe. And once you feel safe, you can then grow. Okay? So the first year of your life, you're in a philo species-oriented attention. Philosomatic. Philosomatic. Humans and my body and my surroundings, right? Because all soma is, all right, is, and they say living body, but don't pay attention to that. Somatics is the science of the relationship between self and surroundings. So first year of your life, the priority is to philo, to bond. All right, second year of life, a little more bonding. Now it's about me. I shift my attention, as I learn how to walk and eat and do things independently, to myself. I start to self-regulate. I become ontosomatic in my attention, primarily. And then the third year of life, again, it's a relationship. We did self, now we'll do surroundings. We started out with other, then we went to self, now we go to surroundings. That's the ecosomatic year of your life, third year of your life. And that's when you get your emotional cues of other things that are going on. The tone of a room, temperature, light, all these other environmental triggers that the casinos are very fond of make you eco-somatic in your attention. I pay attention to my surroundings and I respond. Fourth year of life, big brain change. Now we can actually compare events. We can predict and remember and lie like rugs. And we get outside our soma. We become cognitive for the first time, really aware of our thoughts. A proprioception of thoughts occurs. So neuroception now is advancing itself. And now we begin to generate a worldview, which by the end of the fourth year of life, 80% of it is hardwired. We become exosomatic. We have systems and tools and beliefs and all these different, you know, filters that will now homogenize our experiences. Only 9% of us have our clearest year in that fourth year. 68% of us, that first year, when we're a bunch of puddin' heads, philo. And the rest, onto and eco, 12 and 11% respectively. Okay? So there's your four domains. So what I did was, because you can see on someone's face, in any image of them actually, because the eyes are extensions of the brain, you can see how that brain was organized during its first 4 years of life by looking at certain factors in their image. You profile the picture. And as you get to know the person, everyone has all four of these levels of attention. One is primary. One is internalized biologically during those first 4 years of life that allows you to experience this thing called neuroception. Okay, the news is in. And Susie has been reelected. Oh, I'm depressed. Anyway, so that was that. The Vic Susie mystery from last night. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we have a midpoint coming up in the season on November 7th. Get to that. We're going to get to these somatic profiles of the major elections, governor and Senate ones. I'm not going to pay attention to the House. Who cares? whatever you're going to do. And if I see anything interesting here on Rachel, I'll pop it up. But what's the, I got to get the name of that holiday. Let's see. I'll ask Professor Val again. It starts with an L. Maybe that's another one. But anyway, we get to the midpoint on the 7th, which is this weekend, right when the freaking clock changes, right when the freaking moon changes on the 6th, on the new moon on the 6th. I mean, we're just so buried. I got to look that up. I was not going to know. So, Oppenheimer won. I'm just miserable. No. She'll never get it voted out then. It's done in my lifetime. Well, I won't care. Tell you the truth, I'll be leaving New York as soon as freaking possible. Hate this place. Anyway, in 2010, here we go. It is called, Samhain. And it hits us November 7th. Let's see if Val's around for that. I'll tell you in a sec here. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to have to look up how to pronounce it. Every time I see it, I go, I say it wrong. So, here's what it is. Ah, son of a bitch. Sorry, guys. I'm really getting, I'm getting to the point where I'm getting a little bit saucy. You know, I need to be interrupted. I need to be engaged in a conversation or the guy the threats kicks in. Yeah, that's it. Yes. Let's see if anybody's popping over here. I had requested one of my Facebook pals who's staunch Republican to pop on the air tonight if they were available, but I don't think we're going to get any help there. God, I can't even type. I'm typing with one hand and talking to you with another. My God, damn. I'm trying to get Professor Val to come on and explain this to you guys. Unbelievable. I guess you can't now. Why? I'm whining to it. I want this explained. I'll explain it, because I'll look it up. Damn thing. What'd she say? Right. Well, thank you for Susie. So, let me get back to this holiday here called the Samhain. Like, I have to try to pronounce it because I'm terrible at these things. But it basically just means we're at the midpoint of the fall. And you've seen some of these changes kind of subtly coming over the landscape the last couple of weeks, right? We experience it kind of in waves. We first get a shift in the light, it gets darker a little earlier, we start getting, oh my God, you know. That's that seasonal affective disorder, the light part. The next part is what we mess with in this culture is time, which is this weekend, daylight savings. And I can't even pronounce his name. Who could pronounce looking at that? Hey, that doesn't help me. It's an Irish word. Samhain. Samhain. I can't say it. Let's see if there's actually a site that actually tells me how to pronounce it. It would be nice. Halloween, whatever. You know, and a lot of the rituals we have around this time of the year, you know, relate to that. Oh, here he goes. Well, how do you pronounce this? They spell it with all the stupid phonics. Includopedia. The Includopedia. I'm losing my mind. How do you pronounce this? I'm going to ask her. Oh. I just want to get it right so I can tell you the story about it because it's important. Loser Brown. That song is so in? So in. Sam Hain becomes so in? It just means that we're at the mid-quarter point of the season. We're at the halftime of the fall. And what it means for us individually as somers who live in the rhythm is different things. So, as in O, I stub my toe. So in. So in. Okay. Sow in. Oh, sow. Sow. Sow in. Sow in. Okay. Gotcha. And it's a Gaelic term, but basically, like I said, all it means is midpoint of the fall. Oh, boy. Okay, so what does it mean for us here in summertime, summerland? Will you shut up now? You're gonna be... I got it. talking to myself. Anyway, what a show. What a show summertime's become over the last 3 years, huh? All right. So we're back to this discussion of Samhain. Samhain. Once we get to this midpoint this weekend, which involves three big seasonal shifts, because remember, the mid-quarter points of the season, the cross-quarter points, as they call them, are kind of, you know, they ebb and flow with the seasonal changes, the equinoxes and the solstices, right? So you have these lunar cycles coming in between it, and then you have the solar cycles going ebb and flowing around the different seasons. So what happens is that you get an offsetting. We have a new moon on the 6th, and then we have this mid-quarter point on the next day. So we have a new moon, which is a moon that's at its lowest energy point. And then we have this peak, almost like having a full sun, so to speak, of the season of fall. So it's a peak exo time, right, because it peaks on the new moon. And then we have a peak eco day on Sunday. It is energetically the equivalent of going from Nebraska flatland into mountainous country in the dark the next day. So everybody out there, you're hearing this, and we're changing the clocks. All right? Ah, boy. So it's very intense, is what I'm trying to say. And then on the other side of that week, we then go into a phylo moon energy as we ramp up. So almost all four domains will be hitting our nervous systems this weekend. Okay? And because of that, and especially because this time of the year, the only one that's not at the dance is the ontosomatic one. All right? That happens on a full moon. So our nervous systems are going to feel very distracted by all these different energies that hit us on a biological level. All right? Now, that's the environmental side of the domains. And you could read about that on my site, on somaspace.org. Check out the coherence calendar over there. And it'll give you, like I said, it gives you an idea of how every phase of the moon has a different message for us from a different domain. And then you have every season gives you a 90-day entrainment on that domain. We're in the eco part of the year. As the tuberculosis kicks in again during the fall. So this is the peak part of the fall, this weekend, Sunday. The peak part of the exo-lunar phase is Saturday. Then we change the clocks. Unbelievable. And so how are we going to prepare for this? Well, there's a couple of ways we can do it, right? we can go more on the homeopathic side, and we can take things like magnesium phosphoricum 30C, which helps you with sleep. Everything about the fallback part is about recovering our ability to rejuvenate ourselves, to rest. So most people, because sleep is like basically it's like a resource we've lost. No one lives in rhythm out there. Least of all me, as an eco. So magnesium phosphoricum is a cheater. It's a way to get your system to feel a sleep state without actually having to sleep. So if you get magnesium phosphoricum 30C, any health food store would have it. It's part of the Polycrest. You take it for 3 nights before bed, and your system will get a deeper amount of rest, and you'll wake up feeling more refreshed, especially through this weekend with the clock change. That's one way. The other way is to take it more of it as a jet lag situation because of the hour difference, especially people that are traveling. But most of us not doing much of that right now, but it does feel like a metabolic shift. And you could take the remedy called Coculus, 2 C's, 30C, and that deals with the energy deprivation that goes on. So your body will entrain that. So you can go MagFos more for your minerals and more for your buffer system, or you can take Coculus more for your metabolic lag time that goes on over the clock change. A couple other ways of dealing with it, you could take elderberry syrup, which helps boost up the immune system, chlorophyll, which helps as a blood detergent, or you could take arabinogalactin, or its fun name, ara-6, which is a larch tree extract. And that deals, again, with surfactant in the lungs and getting you more oxygen, because as the season goes on, we're going to get colder and darker. So less light for the nervous system to feel more awake and alert, and colder temperatures, which sends the energy to the core and makes you less active. We should be getting quieter as we get towards the winter solstice, right? That's the exoseason, when we're totally at our core. We're going through the residual layers now, deeper in the residual layers now. We go into deep repair after Saturday. And what that means is the year is winding down. But what do we do? What do we do in this culture? We party! 6 weeks of family hijinks and travel and angst and just pedal to the metal all the way to New Year's Day. So if the flu shot didn't get you, then the culture will. And it basically takes most of our pins out somewhere between December 15th and then the end of the month. So how do we prepare for that angle of it? Because the social stress that we're under this time of the year is the most diametrically opposed to what's going on biologically that we experience in a 12-month cycle. It's always confusing. I always wonder if people in South America, Southern Hemisphere, that everything is kind of it's kind of off sync. You know, the Christmas is coming during summer for them, but when things are more active, if they actually get healthier in January than we do, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, the strategy I want to give you guys for that is called a Jungian induction. All right? Now, Jungian induction, Jung was, of course, a famous psychologist. His way of looking at time, a little different than Einstein, a little different than a lot of guys that were his contemporaries, he looked at it as an inductive process, that time was almost like a suggestion. It wasn't actually like, they talk about in classical physics, three dimensions of space, one at a time. He looked at it much more, kind of the way some of the modern people do, especially Rob Bryanton, as duration, as a dimension that's still spatial, but it's over distance. It's duration. It's another dimension, dealing with things over territory. Like, how far away is, from here to the laundromat? Oh, it's 5 minutes, but that can be converted into distance. So duration is distance. Time is distance is another way of doing. So you look at it as an inductive process. So it's something that we make up. It really is. If we can change it all the time, time is made up, guys. Timing, rhythm, no. That is already there. The pace setters are there. You have cells in your body that are part of your sleep-wake cycle, part of your ultradian rhythms, part of your infradian rhythms. Google. But what I want to do is get to this Jungian induction, which is very cool. And what you do is, the night of the time change, if you're not drunk or out doing something stupid, You can do this actually on Saturday night before you go out. You could do it Sunday morning after you come home. And again, if you are partying, I did make the suggestion during the Halloween party weekend. If you take some black currant seed oil pearls, take two of them before you crash, less of a hangover, less dehydrated, and your liver doesn't hate you. So there's a little tip. Now, getting back to the Jungian induction. What you do with this is you basically find where north is, you know, whatever room you're in, okay? And you want your head facing north, all right? So your body, your feet are facing south, head's facing north, so the energy flows right through your body. You find your way on your back and open your legs, so your legs look kind of like an A-frame, so you look like an arrow, right? Put one hand on your chest, one hand on your belly, or you can put your hands on your sides, whatever's more comfortable. Put your hands on your sides, helps do it palms up, anatomical position. Okay, and now what you're going to do, it's very simple, and you can do this at any pace you want to do it at, is you're going to just see a number line in your mind's eye, right? Here you are in the present, and you're going to go backwards. You can go backwards by decades if you're a little older. You can go backwards by five-year cycles. You can go backwards by two-year cycles or one-year cycles, whatever you want, to the date of birth, the year of your birth, the day of your birth. Right? So for me, you know, 46 years ago, there I go, 1964. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back from 1964 back to 2010, and what you're trying to do is a breath every interval that you're doing. So if you're doing 1 year at a time, you can take 46 breaths and get back to now, right? And within every breath, you might see a little flash, little image, something that will appear in your mind's eye that your nervous system, again, neuroception, relates to your ontological self-referencing journey back to now. Fun part is that you can then go forward as many years as you went backward. So I got to go forward 46 years to 2056. Will I be breathing air? I don't know. But I'm going to do this induction. I'm going to make this up. I'm going to balance my future with my past. Most of us live in that email kind of way of looking at time where it comes to the blue line and everything just kind of washes at us from the present, from the past into the present as far as our memories go. And the future just kind of is this little lead tape. It just kind of shows up one moment at a time. We don't understand the relationship between the future and the past yet. We don't have that figure eight awareness yet, but that Necker cube consciousness that we need to understand how the future is created from the raw materials of our past. And most of the time, it looks the same. Most of the time, it's a loop. It's only when we allow ourselves to expand and entertain novelty and let the future be welcomed that we get any differences at all. But you go out of that timeline, 46 years for me, and you come back to now. Now, what you do is you go backwards three times, to your date of birth, and forward three times to whatever number of years it is into the future, and come back to now. By the time you do that, there'll be so many images flooding in your brain, you would have created a synchronization between yourself, your life, your past, and all these possible futures that you're attempting to entrain. And by having it, doing it during the time change night, when you get the extra hour, right, fake time, it's just like when you go forward in the spring, and it will then create a phase transition because you would have offset your rhythm by the clock changing around you. So I try to do it right at 2 in the morning. I'm usually up, and it's very powerful when the 2 o'clock in the morning becomes 1 o'clock in the morning. If you've been doing this Jungian induction, you feel that sort of time travel kind of state. And a lot of times, symptoms that you've had for, you know, decades will start to just kind of dissolve. Emotions that you've been hanging on to will lift. People that have been running around your head, banging on your brain, will just leave because you're not on that train anymore, that train of thought. That timeline has then shifted and jumped tracks to another timeline so that you can resynchronize to the now post-daylight savings hour. So that's a Jungian induction. Anybody wants to know it, pop me an email at nakedsoma@gmail.com. I'll eventually get to it. Another place to get me is yesman@gmail.com. I usually see that one more than I see the other one. So let me just double check the email here, see if Paul's around. I don't think he is. We're going to try and get Paul on next week to go over the election a little bit. I got a bunch of stats on that. Let's see if he's there. We'll look at the semantics on it, and like I said, I'll flip through some of these pundits here in a minute just to see what they're saying. All right, let's see what Rachel's up to now. Here we go.
Hillary Clinton. I don't know about you, but I have. So, I mean, there's a lot of Democrats who don't want
Christine O'Donnell.
You need Second Amendment remedies.
Looking at how can we best benefit from the media.
Sharon
of church and state arises out of the Constitution. Oh, it doesn't. Oh, the founding fathers didn't believe in the separation of church. That's the establishment clause, the First Amendment.
Actually, Thomas Jefferson has been misquoted like I've been misquoted out of context.
Goodbye, Sharon Engel. Goodbye, Christine O'Donnell. We will enjoy your TV show sometime in the very near future, I'm sure. Also, you know, Rich Iatt, the Nazi ran after guy, he lost. He lost big to incumbent Ohio Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur by 18 points. That said, we did get kind of a mixed message on the whole Nazi reenactment thing because one of the Nazi reenactor guy's key supporters did prevail. This guy made two big separate donations to the Nazi reenactors campaign and didn't ask for the money back after the Nazi dress-up pictures surfaced. Then, the weekend before the election, this guy showed up at a campaign rally in support of the Nazi reenactor guy. That guy, the big-time no-regrets supporter of the Nazi dress-up candidates, will be our new Speaker of the House. So, yeah, kind of a mixed message on the whole wearing a Nazi uniform for fun on the weekend thing. On the Democratic side, there were definitely some who lost their seats who will be missed by progressives for totally opposite reasons, progressive heroes who will not be coming back in January, including Patrick Murphy, the Iraq War veteran who successfully got the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal through the House. Russ Feingold, of course, the three-term senator from Wisconsin, also lost his re-election bid. Tom Perriello, who fought a gutsy, no-apologies, actual capital D Democratic campaign in a tough district and earned a lot of progressive respect for it. Also, of course, Alan Grayson, liberal firebrand forever.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick. That's right, don't get sick. If you get sick in America, this is what the Republicans want you to do. If you get sick, America, the Republican health care plan is this. Die quickly.
While the loss of those pugnacious Democrats is
kind of love that guy.
On the left, the bigger story in Democratic losses is that it is the conservative Democrats, the blue dog Democrats,
blue dog,
who were absolutely decimated in last night's elections. Of the Progressive Caucus, which has more than 80 members, so the liberals, Progressive Caucus, more than 80 members, four of them were knocked out either in the primaries or in last night's elections. For the Blue Dog Coalition, for the conservatives, they've got 53 members. 24 of them lost re-election bids this year. Nearly half of the Blue Dog Caucus is now gone, including two of their co-chairs. That is the story of this year's elections on the Democratic side and in Democratic politics. Joining us now is Washington, D.C. editor of The Nation magazine and MSNBC contributor Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes.
Let me get into my semantic evaluation of this because I'm almost done with this whole election thing. Basically, what happened was is that just like in a lot of midterm elections, people vote emotionally and you get polarization and then it'll restabilize again into your it makes me nuts. All right. I'm going to read off the senators that were reelected or elected from the Philo domain. We have leading John McCain from Arizona, Johnny Isaacson from Georgia, David Vitter of the prostitution thing, Louisiana, Barbara Michalewski from Maryland, David Heineman from Nebraska, Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire. Everyone but Barbara there is Republican. Kristen Gildebrand from New York, she's a Democrat, also a Philo. John Tooney from South Dakota, Mike Lee from Utah, a couple of Republicans, and Joe Manchin from West Virginia. A total of 10 Philos back in the Senate. On the Onto side, we have Richard Shelby, Barbara Boxer, Sam Brownback, Dennis Rehberg, Chuck Schumer, Tom Corbin, and Jim DeMint. Jim DeMint, I love Jim DeMint. Everybody but Barbara Boxer and Chuck Schumer were Republicans. There's seven of them, seven Onto senators. From the Eco Division, we have Lisa Murkowski from Arkansas. Oh, I'm sorry, Alaska. Oh, she's a write-in candidate. She's a saucy story. She's Republican, too, and she had lost the primary. They wrote her in, and she won. How about that? Balls on that one. John Boozman from Arkansas. Chris Coons from Delaware, who beat our friend Christy Whippin there. Jerry Moran, Kansas. Rand Paul, the trophy of the Tea Party from Kentucky. Barney Frank from Massachusetts, of course, a Democrat, and John Hovind from North Dakota. 7 ecos, 4-3 in the Republican versus Democrat scoreboard on that, if you keep it scoring the senators. But look at these, they're all controversial. Ecos. And then you have the exos. We had 6 of them. Michael Bennett from Colorado, close race. Daniel Ayuge, I can't pronounce his name, from Hawaii. Charles Grassley from Iowa, Harry Reid, Nevada, hung on over there, old man Harry Reid, Richard Burr from North Carolina, and Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. 3-3, if you're keeping score at home between the Reds and the Blues, you know who they are. So there's your senators. So, again, 10 filos, 7 ontos, 7 ecos, and 6 exos. Going on the governor's side, the ontos won this race. By 1, they had 9, Philos had 8, Ecos had 7, Exos had 6. I'm cherry picking here, it's not everybody, but these are the big races that Huffington Post talked about. From some of the significant ones on the Onto domain that showed up, of course, Andrew Cuomo in New York, Lincoln Ashafi, who's the independent over there in Rhode Island, who left the Republican Party after all, had a big beef with Obama, he was all over the map, anyway, he won. Rick Perry got reelected in Texas. C.L. Butch Otter in Idaho. He's kind of a tough brood. And Jan Bruner, of course, from the immigration fame in Arizona. That one broke down. 6 of the 9 were Republican. We had 2 Democrats and the 1 independent, Lincoln Chaffee in Rhode Island. So there's your Onto division of the governors. The Philos had 8, like I said, and some controversial ones, like Nikki Haley, Tea Party extraordinaire, down there in South Carolina. We had Roy Blunt from Missouri. He was an interesting candidate. Marco Rubio down in Florida won. All these files as well. And it looks like, let's see, we got 5-3 Republicans in the Philo governor's races that were significant. Going to Ecos, oh, man, Moonbeam Jerry Brown. Hung on to one out there in California. Not a lot of the names that you really recognize here. There were 7 of them altogether. Pat Murray, I guess, in Washington State was a big story. It was a close election. But nobody else that really is significant. So, there's 7 of them there. But so weird how the Eco governors, except for Jerry Brown, weren't very controversial. Almost all the senators were. And on the Exo side, we had 6, and it was a 3-3 split. Patrick Leahy, significant for the Democrats. And Terry Branstad, I guess, kind of important for the Exos, for the Republicans out in Iowa. But overall, it looks kind of like, almost kind of like split down the middle. I mean, you had, I profiled 60 of them here quickly before the show. And you had 35 Republicans plus 1 independent, who really is a Republican. A little more than half. And overall, Philos had 18, Ontos had 16, counting the senators and governors that I profiled. Ecos had 14, and the Exos had 12. So a pretty even distribution, but the lion's share of it was, if you break it down, was that the Republican Party, because 12 of the 18 that were Philos here, were Republicans. They're going back to what they always do. Again, by electing Philos, of course, Philos tend to vote for Philos, is that, and then mostly don't even know you're doing it, is that when you look at them, they are receptive. They seem friendly. They seem open. They seem, almost kind of you bond with them instantly. And that is the worldview that the Republican Party is trying to put out there, the family values, the culture wars. That's where they can campaign and really just clobber the usually emotional, usually evasive
Democratic Party, which, you know, like it or not, that's what they are. And so when you look at it, the split, I mean, we're basically right down the middle, 7-7 on the eco side. But when you look at the way the Democrats did it, is that, you know, you got a lot of incumbents here, but you also have a lot of guys that just kind of survived in their campaigns. Rand Paul's a big victory for the Democrats because for the Republicans. God, I hate these damn rumors. Because what happens is that now you have polarization, and that polarization becomes much more difficult to kind of damper down once you get past, you know, the pomp and circumstance of the lame duck and getting them in there, because now you have someone who, everyone's going to watch this guy's votes. Everyone's going to watch what things he supports, what committees he's on. You can track these guys. Senators are easier to track than you know, definitely governors or definitely House guys, but it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird how everybody deals with everybody here. Anto division, again, you had 12 out of 16 counting the independent, were Republican. So what does that mean? When you see 12 out of 18 Philos and 12 out of 16 Antos coming in, that's 80% of the population is Philos and Antos. When most of them here are Philos and Antos, they're playing to authority and family and tradition and you know, basically the extremes of not the moderate part of the base, as she was talking about before, the blue dog Democrats are got hosed. People don't want moderation when things are going rough. They want extremes, and they vote their base. There's not a lot of thinking, not a lot of converting purple votes here. All right? You look at the 20% side of the coin, you know, which is over here on the eco and exo side, and you see symmetry. You know, it's 7-7 in the ecos, and it's 6-6 in the exo side. So they serve more as a balancing mechanism for this polarization that goes on between Antos and Philos. And, you know, that, with our exo president, Obama, and with Antos in the cabinet, like Hillary, you know, creaking around, it's more of an ideological, somatic conversation that we're going to be having, because it isn't about what you think when it comes to politics. It's about how these people make you feel. And they prey on it, they study it, they know what to do. And it's very funny to me when you see them try to philo-size an Anto or Anto-size a philo and make them look mean, and they can't. It's simply not believable. And a lot of times it's like we almost expect it to be phony, so it just gets even more phony. That cracks me up in a way, in a weird way. So there's your philo summary, your somatic summary of last night's election. Like I said, I'm going to try and get our buddy on next week from the Merlin Project to analyze this a little bit more. But, you know, just as my way of saying my goodbyes to Decision 2010, I'll say to everyone who got elected or anyone who's going to be going down to Washington in January, just be aware, no matter what party you're from, what we think of you here, out here in the land of the lost, is you're all...
You filthy criminals.
And so we will be watching you with that in mind. So there you go. There's your analysis of that. So I don't know. There's not much else for me to say tonight. I'm going to get go over to TMZ here for a minute to finish up the hour. Get out of here quick. We did a show last night. I'm sick of it. Sick of you. Randy Moss is a titan. If anyone followed the Randy Moss story since Sunday night, I'm going to see if I can find the clip here on YouTube to play, because it is hilarious. It really is. He finishes up a game. Now, poor Brett Favre is getting his brains beat in. Carter up the field, with a busted up jaw. And here's old Randy, giving a business. And then there was a whole incident after that with the catering service. So, let's see if I can find Randy, press conference, let's see. Because he was an angry man. So here he is after the press conference after the game on Sunday night, basically setting up a chain of events that ended today.
And actually, the worst than listening to your former team and only getting a catch process after a check. Afterwards, Moss took the photo started to call Belichick one of the greatest coaches of all time, and then things turned interesting.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and start this thing off. I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think I said some a couple weeks ago. Look, I got fined $25,000 for not talking to you all, and me personally, I really don't care, but at the same time, answer questions throughout the week. But for the league to find me $25,000, I'm not going to answer any more questions for the rest of this year. If it's going to be an interview, I'm going to conduct it. So I'll answer my own questions, ask myself the questions, then give y'all the answers. So from here on out, I'm not answering any more questions for the rest of this season. And enough said of that. Now we get to the game. I love me some.
All right, yeah. Of course, Deion, the goofy Philo, is having his fun with him. But that got his butt cut by the Vikings the very next day. And today, apparently, I got to go double-check it, but apparently the Titans, who lost one of their receivers, Kenny Britt, who also was involved in a barroom brawl, who's also an eco, by the way, picked up by the Titans. So he landed not only on his feet, but he landed in a better position than he was in when he was on the Vikings. Oh, my God. How does this happen? Well, again, this is the NFL. The NFL justifies everything because it basically preys on all the weak spots in the culture, because it really exploits the sex, violence, visual, it's the George Carlin thing, it's warlike. I mean, there's so much going on with when it comes to football, how it programs the culture. It really does. I mean, we have a baseball culture that's, what is this thing doing? That has a football mentality. So we have this pastoral sort of view of things, like baseball, very pastoral. But, they're called national pastime. But we're so aggressive in the way that we do it that it's like we're not able to do one thing or the other. We're not able to relax and then be active. We sort of tensely unwind as a culture. So when you see this happen, it's kind of, timing is everything, says Jeff Fisher. I really think the quicker we get him on the field, the longer he's here, the more productive he'll be. I think we can help us. I'm looking forward to seeing him run under those deep balls, right? Because he runs the nine pattern, right? So home run, hit it. Fisher said he did his due diligence. This guy went to the strip club where Kenny Britt was in a fight to undercover to ask questions of the employees there. So funny. So let's see. He's going to miss this weekend's game. Kenny Britt's going to miss this weekend's game. So they hope to have, Moss is going to be around. So they have a bye this week? Yeah, they don't have a game until the 14th, but they think Kenny Britt's going to miss that game. So they'll have him around. And then Randy's excited to get back playing football. He's ready to go. Moss is already being welcomed. Why do you need Randy Moss? You can't put an eight in the box. You get Randy Moss. It's amazing. They go right back. This guy made such a spectacle of himself, not trying in games, dogging it, trashing the post-game caterer, pining away for the team in New England, and ultimately alienating everything that he just got traded to this team because he wanted a contract with the Patriots. He's on his third team in 3 months. And everyone's looking forward to it. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. But again, that's the nature of the beast. That's what we're dealing with in the world out there. It has that kind of an overall feel. It's like, as long as you can blank, we'll keep you around. So we're performance-based, but we're also highly opinionated about performance. We break it down to all kinds of granular things. Poor Derek Jeter's and picked his unproductive year that just went on has been basically just, raked over the coals as he awaits this, next contract with the Yankees. And the Yankee fans are in a bit of a double bind because he's Derek Jeter. But we don't want to pay him as much money because we really want to get, it's amazing. It's very superficial, but that's kind of, like I said, that's what we're up against. We're up against that all the time. So just to recap, because I'm going to wind it down here, I'm really sick of coming on the air and having nobody talk to me.
I'm just sick of that. I'd really would like to get, I like having a conversation. So next week, like I said, maybe we'll get our friend over there from the Merlin Project and go over the election again a little bit differently, a little more forward-leaning, a little more woo, like talking woo. Like I said, going into this weekend, the biggest thing is the clock change. You've got a lot of things going on subtly. Prepare for the transition between Saturday and Sunday, all right? Because we're going to be in flat land on Saturday, and we're going to be in absolute billy goat mountains on Sunday. So what that means really for you guys is that the suspicion that's in the air this week is natural with Exo Week. That peaks on Saturday. And then we go into an empathic transition for going into the Eco Week, starting on Sunday, but in addition to that, we have the time change. So, and also, we go into a more of a Philo vibe for the entire week next week, because the eco part is seasonal, all right? So it's more of a punctuation. And then the lunar shift, the Philo moon comes in under that eco sun. So it's empathic, and it's also about that neuroception, that bonding I was talking about before, that Philo thing. So think about it. It's an emotional connection that's on the solar side, and then it's a much more of a bonding connection, much more of a relationship thing on the lunar side. So it's extremely volatile, I think. And then there'll be football all day. So there you go. Check out the fantasy physiology on my site. I'll be breaking down week 9 in the NFL, looking at the quarterbacks are progressing as we get to a Philo weekend for them. So I think that's about it. And I'll sum it up with a little of this.
Bruce, I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee!
Is that your final answer?
Our service is God! Bing, 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 bing!
Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse. Oh, and by the way, you suck!
There you go. That sums up my emotions for the week. I'm completely fed up. Let's see, what can I do to play us out here? I had the hazy shade of winter to lead us in. So what would sum up my week and my thoughts as we put the election, rearview mirror? Susie freaking Oppenheimer got reelected. We're all just a bunch of dummies. Bunch of dumbasses. Not sure. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Oh, my God. People call me all the time. They're on the air, off the air. Nuts. Not cruel summer. I can't go there. Let's see. A little Sinatra. Cue the Sinatra. Northern in New York. Yeah, the Giants won the World Series this week. We had Tony Bennett going on all over the place. Sinatra. That'll sum it up. So as the leaves fall and as the time changes and we get ready for a November to remember, a little Frankie. To play us out here. I think this one's a little better. 1958, this song came out. How about that? There we go. Well, thanks for joining us here in Summertime. I'm Dr. Mark again. You can go visit me over at summerspace.org. Any questions, any comments? Love the show. Be back next week with Paul Garcia, hopefully, from the Merlin Project. You guys take care. Thank you very much for your time and your space. Be yourself and be well. Travel light through the darkness.
Autumn in New York. It felt the thrill of first lighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steam. They're making me feel.
automatic line.